Hello, and welcome to the Writers and Illustrators of the Future podcast. This is John Goodwin, your host. This podcast is dedicated to the aspiring writer or artist and will provide inspiration and tips from top professionals in the field, along with contest winners and a few surprise guests. Well, today, it's not just a few contest winners we're talking to. We have last night's event that we held here at in Hollywood at the Taglian Complex. We have two of our grand prize winners. There were four in total last night, but one was an Australian, one was in the UK, and is not able to be here. But today we have the Writers of the Future Volume 37 grand prize winner, Barbara Lund.
Hi.
And we have the Illustrators of the Future grand prize winner from Volume 36, N. Lee.
Hi, everyone.
So this is really, really exciting, and we've got several things I'm very anxious to go over and discuss with you. The most obvious thing was it just happened. Last night, you were the grand prize winners announced at the very end of the event. And so let's start with you, Barbara. So what was that like getting that announcement? What was going on?
I had completely convinced myself that somebody else was going to win the grand prize. And so it was an incredible shock and complete overwhelm.
Got it. And N?
For me, I came into the announcement of the winner just convincing myself that it's okay if I win or not, because I don't want to get my hopes up too much and be disappointed. So I was just happy to be there and just kind of take deep breaths. And then when my name was called, I was like, oh my gosh. And then my whole body just started shaking uncontrollably. And my family was there as well, and they were jumping up and down out of joy. And it was just so many emotions just happening. And
your mother was the first one out of the seat. She was up there just jumping up and down.
She was. And it was so happy for me to see her do that, because I know how hard she's worked for me. And it's just amazing that she was so happy at the moment. And after that, I was just, in shock still. And just struggling my way up to the stage was kind of hard at the moment. And when I got up there, I didn't know what to do. I was just like, oh, should I go talk? Or like, I don't know. I'm still processing all of this. So I got up there and I just kind of gather as much words as I could and trying to make it tangible for the audience. And so, after that, it's still a blur at this moment, but it's
pretty good. You can watch the tape afterwards and see what you said. I love your story, Barbara. It was just Sixers, and that's why it's up front in the book too. So tell me a bit about that story, because it's just obviously it's a grand prize winner, so people are going to want to listen or will want to read this. So without giving away the whole story, tell me about it and how you came up with that idea.
So almost all of my stories come from dreams. I just wake up and have a story in my head, which is part of why I have to write them down to get them out. And this one was a dream as well. The concept is what if or when in a world where sixth sense becomes scientized, what would happen around that? And then the story itself is about a woman fighting her way across kind of a war-torn area to get to her son.
Yeah, so how far in the future is that?
Not very far.
I thought you were going to say that, and that's scary. So, because it was intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really intense. The now you have a lot of sense of obviously reading all these different personalities. You really have these different these senses that they have. You got the ones that have a little bit of everything, and then you have the very specific things. So a little bit about that.
So kind of like any of the other sixth sense or magic type things, only this one's supposedly backed by science, right? Uh-huh. Kind of an X-Men flavor of what you could do, but it's provable. There's machines that can record it and measure and then training and things like that.
I get it. And then your sense of forensics was pretty intense in there, and what you're able to do and some of the different battle scenes that were happening and what was happening to her as she was going through her. She would go into, what was the martial art that she did?
Tai Chi.
Tai Chi. So is that something you do yourself already?
I do.
Okay. Because there's always, when you get something that's that exacting as to what's going on, usually the author is like, okay, I've got some sense of what it is. And it's not something they just read in a book.
Yeah, I've done it for a long time.
Or Googled it.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, and I talked to you about it when we did the big reveal. But your sense of color is just amazing. Now, is this something, because you're from Vietnam, mm-hmm. is that something that you brought with you from, is that a cultural thing, those types of colors? Because it's definitely not something that I see around here in America.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it is definitely from my culture, because when I was a kid, some of my most fond memories were celebrations for festivals like Lunar New Year or other festivals that we have in Vietnam. And during those festivals, there were tons of vibrant colors everywhere on the street you see. And as a kid, before I started drawing, I was coloring. I loved to color. And I think my sense of wonder with color as a kid just kind of hooked onto those colors at the festivals. And when I came to the U.S., I think I brought some of that with me, as well as along my journey to becoming an illustrator where I am today. I'm always continually looking at new colors and new materials and just new ways to combine colors in a way that's very catching to the eye and very interesting to look at. So I think it's definitely a mix of where I came from Vietnam, and as I continue to grow, that kind of develops more and more on top of that foundation.
I mean, it's just, I'm looking at it right now in the book in volume 36, Stolen Sky, that you illustrated. And now you're going to school in Missouri or Kansas City?
I recently graduated from the Kansas City Art Institute. It's been over a year now.
Okay. Yeah. And because that's where you were attending when you submitted this, or when you won the contest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's the medium that you've done this with? Is this Photoshop or is this?
The medium that I mainly use is Photoshop digital painting. I started out as an artist doing a lot of traditional stuff, but I discovered digital painting when I was about a sophomore in high school, and just something about being able to have so much exploration and so much possibilities on the computer that really intrigued me. And playing with colors on the computer is also, it's very fun because it's super easy to just exchange colors very quickly, like back and forth, to see which one kind of fits really well with another. And so digital just makes it so easy for me to explore color choices and explore different styles. So I've stuck with it ever since. And so this was that medium that I used to create the piece.
I mean, your colors, there are so many colors in here. Mm-hmm. And I could imagine if this was something done as oil, it wouldn't even be acrylic, but how you have to make a change, you know, a universal change in the image, because these your colors are permeate throughout. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's amazing. So in terms of Photoshop then, because a lot of people listening to this will, okay, so Photoshop. So any particular type of palettes that you use? I know that Craig Elliott was just posting some stuff recently. He's one of our judges. Mm-hmm. About the to make it look like oil painting, you know, using Photoshop to make it look oil. Is there any particular thing, or are you just kind of like whatever suits you on?
So I do experiment with Photoshop a lot in trying to both get sometimes the traditional feel, which is imitating the oil painting feel, and sometimes I just kind of embrace the digital aspect of it, making everything kind of very rendered out and very smooth. But with this particular piece, I think I wanted to just render it out, and instead of using texture and brush strokes, I wanted to focus on the form and the designs of the characters. Mm-hmm. And the colors, because I think if I added texture on top of it, it would be too much. There's already so much design and colors and form and just organic movement there that I wanted to just make it very clear and smooth out for the viewer to see what's going on.
I get it.
Yeah.
And then Barbara, now on Sixers, the story is it in Utah where it takes place, or is it just in any town USA that's just been whacked by this super gnarly bombs, these smart bombs that go in.
Yeah, any town, USA.
But it's USA. Mm-hmm. Yes. And on, I'm looking at, you know, at this right now, and the, you've been, it says, on Barbara Lund's novel Speaker for the People, won second place in the science fiction fantasy category of the 2015 Zebulon contest sponsored by Pikes Peak Writers. The novel has since remained and published as Space Lies Syndicate. Since then, she has won 3 Silver Honorable Mentions and 2 Honorable Mentions. She has 5 indie published novels and dozens of short stories and has been traditionally published in daily science fiction. Had a husband, 2 kids, a dog, and a martial arts obsession, and she keeps pretty busy. So how long have you been working your muse of writing?
Really right about 2014, just before that, well, 2013 probably, just before that win encouraged me to keep going.
Uh-huh. So now as, what triggered you to become a writer?
I wrote when I was younger, and then I got a real job. And unfortunately, that kept me a little busy. But I had some time off work, and it just had a couple of months where I had things to do, and that was one of the things that came back as something important to work through what was going on, and it really helped. And I also have a beautiful garden because of it, so.
Absolutely. So on yourself now, so you've got novels and short stories. So what is your plan as an author for the future?
I would love to be a hybrid author where I can still continue to publish on the indie side, the short stories and the novels that I would like to take indie. And then I would love to have some more traditional sales as well, both novels and short stories with the magazines and the big houses. I'd love a big 5.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
4, big 4 now.
Now it is 4, yes. But yeah, some pretty decent indies. You know, we had the publisher of Bain Books last night, which it was really exciting to be able to bring. I mean, what we tried to do now is bring publishers, editors, art directors, different people to come in who can either lend a helping hand or introduce you to some of their contacts or be directly interested in working with you. What's it been like in with those who have been teaching the workshops? You've got Echo Chernik, mm-hmm. who's just
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. She's so diversified in everything she can do. And there's not something she hasn't touched upon and worked in art, in the field of design, arts. Mm-hmm. She definitely knows the business side of it. So what's it been like this week for you?
This week, I thought it was super helpful, and it was very cool to see different artists with different styles and different journeys come and talk about how they've done their career as an illustrator and where their path is leading, because we did have Echo, who is a master of everything. She does conventions, books, cards, like everything. And we had Echo talk about how to brand herself and how to put herself out there as illustrators, but also how to deal with clients in a way that is reputable and it will get you more work in the future, which is very important as an illustrator to get returning clients wanting to get more of your amazing work. And we had Echo's husband, Lazarus, who helped us a lot about how you look at a portfolio as a way to sell yourself, how to compose in a way that's very, that makes sense for the viewer and for the client to look at, and they would want to hire you after about like the first 15 seconds. And that was very helpful for me because portfolio is, I think, something that a lot of artists struggle with, mm-hmm. and something that's very hard to put together. And his talk was just very clear and direct and in a way that would help a lot of illustrators out there. And we also have other artists who came and was very technical, and they talked about their process and how they do things and just try to teach all of us new ways to create illustration and new ways to look at illustrations as a way to create designs in composition and value that's interesting and very direct to the viewer to tell the story. And mm-hmm. one of my favorite was Dan DeSantos. And his speak on value and how to arrange it in a way that's, it's almost like composing music. It was like he had all these rules and all these ways of how to put an image together that would be very harmonious, but yet very powerful. Mm-hmm. And I loved his talk on that. And I think that would definitely improve my work moving forward. And we had Bea Jackson as well. She is an amazing children's book illustrator, and I'm actually currently working on a children's book right now. And so her talk on how to fasten up some process and how to do things in a way that makes it very quick and very efficient, and I thought that was super helpful to me. And we just also had there's like so many other artists, amazing artists that come, you know, and it's just so cool to see their journey because you're like, ooh, maybe I can do that, or I can do this, or I can do that. There's so many choices for you and as an illustrator to just get out there, and just everyone has their own path. Mm-hmm. So I think probably the best way is just to choose one that your gut is feeling it would be best for you, and just go from there and just trusting yourself. And I think the workshops really provide us with so many pathways to continue on as illustrators.
That's great. So now, Barbara, you've had, throughout the week, you've got the, obviously, Tim Powers and Dave Farland did the primary workshopping, but then there are so many others as well. So briefly describe, or not briefly, just describe what the week has been like for yourself.
Absolutely incredible to meet some of the people in the field that I grew up reading and are my heroes, and just to have them be so personable and so kind and so ready to help us has been amazing. I loved meeting the people in the classes. I loved meeting them after the classes and doing some BarCon connections. incredible teachers, so kind and so generous with their time and willing to help us out.
Yeah, it was in volume 3 where Dave Wolverton won the Writers of the Future competition. He was a grand prize winner then. And he's been a judge for, I don't know, 30 plus years or so. Tim Powers, 35 years. So for them, I mean, I just know because they're good friends. This is pretty much like the highlight of the year for them to be able to do that and meet the new writers and to welcome, and the illustrators as well, to welcome you into the fold of professional. And like when you come and do the workshop on either side, it's assumed you can create art. It's assumed you know how to write. Obviously, you wouldn't have won had you not been able to. But now it gets into the business of writing, the business of art, how to be able to explore different things. And like you're talking about in their career, their own personal journeys. Mm-hmm. And you know, you got Craig Elliott does one way, Tom Wood another way, and how... like how Tom Wood got into professional art and how he evolved. You know, some of these people, they're just, at least these judges here are, they live, you know, art. For them, it's, you know, that they just think everything like that. And it's, Tom Wood talks about how he's just, as a little kid, he loved mm-hmm. doing, you know, doodling and stuff like that. And even when they redecorated his house when he was a kid, they didn't do anything with his room because it already had all the drawings on the walls and things stuck on there. This is his illustrations and stuff as he was working on. So you're talking about your heroes. Anybody in particular that you were like fangirl on that you're like, whoa?
Oh, Jody Lynn Nye, absolutely. And Todd McCaffrey. There's so many. Larry Niven is the nicest guy ever. Mm-hmm. There's just some, you know, all the people I grew up reading are here, and that's amazing to me.
Absolutely. And then in terms of illustration, I know in, you know, in writing in books, mm-hmm. you know, okay, this is Tim Powers on Stranger Tides, and here's Dave Wolverton on Courtship of Princess Leia. But on book covers and on art and illustration, it's not so common that someone will know, oh yeah, that's a Dan DeSantos. Oh yeah, that was, you know, this art design, this creative that was done for Netflix, for Disney. Oh yeah, that's Craig Elliott. Mm-hmm. You know, so is there anybody there particularly that you had that you fanboyed on?
I think I forgot to mention him earlier, but Craig Elliott definitely, because he did so much amazing work for movies that I loved growing up, like Treasure Planet and Hercules. Just his way of designing architecture and landscapes in a way that's very whimsical yet very convincing to the viewer. And I love the way he used shape language, and he had his talk on how to view your designs as a way to like just abstractify like random shapes. And as you see objects in the real world, you don't see them as objects, you just see them as shapes, and you combine them together in your head when you design these things. And I just found it so interesting that he viewed the world like that when he does his designs. Because I myself, as an illustrator, love the concepts of focusing on colors and shapes and combining in a way that can still result in a very interesting design and result in a way that when colors are put together just makes a really cool relationship between the two. And just when I was just looking through all his work and he was just showing this to us, I was just like, holy cow, he did a lot. He did a lot of work and they're all so amazing. And I was just so inspired. And I think Craig Elliott was definitely my hero during that workshop, honestly. Yeah.
That's great. So it's just a point that at the end of the event last night, there was that Owen Hubbard quote about the artist, and they're cut above a regular man. They're cut above. You know, they're very special beings that can create art, whether it's writing or illustration. So throughout the workshop, I know there's various things that were gone over by Owen Hubbard on the subject of writing and on illustration and art. Anything particular for you, Barbara, that was the most profound or helpful for you on, whether it was from the online writing workshop or anything else that was pointed out when Maliba introduced the movie, or when I did the briefing on things that stood out for you that you find very helpful?
For me, the biggest concept is the pay it forward. Just the whole concept of building this contest and having the authors and having the winners come back as judges and having the judges go forward. That pay it forward to me is huge, because this is a writing community. I can never write enough to keep a reader satisfied, just me. I need to have all of my fellow absolutely amazing winners writing as well, so that we can all be able to create enough work for people to read. And then I look forward to someday being one of those judges and being able to help another author, up-and-coming author, become a pro as well.
Mm-hmm. What about yourself? And any particular advice or, you know, things from Mr. Hubbard that I know Echo goes over stuff, but mm-hmm. anything in particular that for you really resounded?
I think mine was going to be also similar to what Barbara said, because I think that as illustrators, you constantly are inspired by other artists' work, and you kind of just study it and look at it in a way that would influence your work and see where you progress as artists. So I think definitely building a community of artists, just to be able to trade ideas, trade concepts, giving another eye to another artist's work is super helpful, because seeing it from another perspective, it's always a good way to improve your art and improve what you're making. But I think I was also inspired by that clip of L. Ron Hubbard saying that a solid routine doesn't always work. And I think that definitely applies to me, because there are those days when I'm very inspired. I can come up with so many different concepts, but there's those days when I sit down and it's just nothing. There's nothing that comes out. You're just dry on creativity. So I think just seeing how he says that, I think you just need to make it, to make art whenever you are feeling inspired. It doesn't have to be a routine. You don't have to just have
9 to 5.
No, that doesn't work creatively, because the brain works differently.
Yeah.
And I'm very inspired by what he said, and I'll probably take that and adjust my schedule as a freelance illustrator, because I am running into some of the problems. Because you do want a solid routine, just to say that, you know, I got a schedule going on. But then if you do that, then it's gonna affect your creativity level a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. There was other times when he wrote, and he just talked about how, you know, he would, for him, mostly it was a writer. And sometimes he could go throughout, not even realize, not eat, not anything. He was so much into, you know, creating the story. Mm-hmm. When he wrote Battlefield Earth, 425,000 words, he wrote that in like 8 months. And Mission Earth, same amount of time, 1.2 million words. So when he got into create, it was just like, the thing about time, you know, it's like, how do you have time for that? It's just, you become at that point cause overtime, you know, right, to be able to do what you need to do. And these judges that you're working with on both sides, but you see it's a little bit more visible on the art side, where you can start with a blank page and end up with this amazingly beautiful, you know, image. Mm-hmm. And these are the judges that are able to do that. So on, one thing too is like B, who was a grand prize winner in volume 24, she was, you know, she said the thing that really impressed her the most is that she learned and still remembers this many years later, 13 years later, is that art is the quality of communication. So for her, and you can really see it in her art, like in Parker Looks Up, that book that she did for the First Lady, mm-hmm, and just that quality of communication is just, you know what's happening. It's very, very real. And illustration is different than fine art. So is your direction that you're trying to go, is it more the illustration? Because like what you've got here, this, mm-hmm, this is definitely illustration, what, yeah, you did there.
No, for me, my path is definitely illustration, because I love being a problem solver and I love being a creative. So I think illustration combines both, because you're able to solve a creative problem that the client comes to you with, and they want you to make an image that will resemble the spirit of this story. And it's very fun to just come up with concepts that are able to solve what they're looking for. And I'm definitely very into also creating solutions for any design that the client would want for any film or any animation. Like if they have an idea of a certain city landscape, but they don't really know how to describe it in words or describe it in a way that's going to be visually effective to the viewer, I'll be there to help them, guide them through the process, and help them come up with a solution visually that would work for what they want. So yeah, definitely illustration is the way that I'm headed.
Got it. Now, one thing too, Dan Dos Santos talks about when he does his sketches, mm-hmm, I put my finger quotes around that, they look like they're almost final, you know? So, and he talked about why you got to do that, because anything that's not fully established in the sketch can be a gray zone that can result in endless additional back and forth with the client. So he tries to take it as, you know, he talks about what, half a dozen or whatever it is, the number of sketches he'll do, that takes it to where he knows what it is, and there's not those gray zones that, once you're proceeding the thing, like, oh no, how do I execute that? Because it was never fully thought through. I found that, I'm not an artist, mm-hmm, but to me that was amazing that he went through all that effort, almost to the point of, not final, but it just seemed like this side of it, you know, to be able to show something to the clients so they can then, okay, yeah, I like that one. But then he knows he can actually execute that.
Right. Yeah, I think his way of working is definitely very clear and effective for a client. I do that as well, but sometimes I also like doing a bunch of loose sketches first, because I think anything to convey an idea across really quickly, it's also effective for a, uh-huh, client at first, because maybe you could propose an idea that they really like, and the sketch might be not very clear, but they really love the idea, and so you can take that and refine it a little bit more and then show them another sketch of that version. And then that would really help as well. But yeah, his way of working, Dan's way of working is just very, very impressive because those sketches look very refined already.
I know.
And it's just really cool to see how different artists have different ways of working. And I think that I'll definitely take some of that with me moving along when working with bigger clients.
That's great. Now, Barbara, one of the things that's sometimes it's really funny, but all the different judges, you know, when they start talking, you know, it's, you definitely see it with Tim and Dave. You know, one's going, okay, let's say, okay, you got to do it like this and this and this. And the next one goes, no, you don't. You go this, this, and this. What was it like, you know, with the various speakers talking about different do's and don'ts, but those do's and don'ts quite frequently will conflict with each other, but yet they've all got successful careers and are doing it right. How's that, you know, because it's not like this is how you write a story that you get from Writers of the Future.
I actually love to watch them argue. That is probably my favorite part because just like in art, there's so many different ways to do it. Nobody's going to have the same career. I'm not going to have Dave Farland's career. I'm not going to have Larry Niven's career or Jody Lynn Nye's career. I have to build my own career. But seeing them argue gives me ideas and gives me a direction to go and things to try so that I can build it my way.
Right. Now, when you've got like when Kevin and Rebecca do their whole hour and a half or so on the business of writing, so this workshop, have you attended workshops before, writing workshops?
Yes. Yeah.
So how is this one with Writers of the Future different?
There is that premise of being able to write, which is awesome because some of the workshops are, especially at conferences, have a much broader, they want, you know, as many attendees as possible and they want to apply to as many attendees as possible. So they have a much broader assumption of starting at the beginning for a lot of their classes. So it was super nice to start more toward the middle or the end because I don't need beginning stuff on how to construct a sentence anymore. So that was great.
Noun and a verb.
Yes. This is pretty immersive and some higher level stuff, which is great, being able to ask questions that are hard instead of asking the more simple ones. For me, I know how to start a story, but I don't always know how to get my middle. And so it was helpful to, I always have an end as well. I always have a start and an end, but I don't always have a middle. So it was great to listen to all the different arguments and pick out the things that I need to amp up my career and go forward.
That's great. Now, one thing too that is probably one of the most well-known aspects, and for some people it's the terror part of the workshop, is a 24-hour story. Because none of these people, at least I don't know if anybody has ever written a story in 24 hours. You know, by the time they come there for the workshop, what was that like for you?
Oh, I love that. That's actually how I work, especially for short stories. If it's a little, like 1,000 word, I can do that in an hour. If it's a couple 1,000 words, I can do that in a day. If it's a little longer, 8,000 to 10,000, maybe it'll take me a week. And then I'll go back and polish it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I write pretty clean, so I don't have a ton of grammatical things to fix. It's more of where did I confuse someone or what can I polish to make better? What can I cut? So yeah, 24 hours is great. I love that.
Well, that's great. And then with the stories themselves, do you have a particular time of day that you're writing, or like, you know, schedule, you know, I know you're talking about routine, but some people who have a day job as well need to be able to fit in how to do it. We've got winners who've got rather large families and they've got to take care of their children. How have you been able to fit in your writing?
Oh yeah, I'm a mess. I'm all over the place, especially with doing Tai Chi as well. So I'll work a full job. Some nights I go to Tai Chi, some nights I come home and parent. And sometimes parenting is giving the 15-year-old a lot of attention and then having her go watch TV with dad so that I can write some things. I do a lot more on the weekend than I do during the week. And it's just whenever I can fit it in, morning, afternoon, night.
And your family supports you, though? They like to cut you some slack so you can do that?
Yeah, they're awesome. They're awesome.
But, yeah, that's a common, dilemma that some people, aspiring writers, have. But how much of that is an actual, and also for art, too, how much of it is a pretended problem versus a real problem on getting time to write or to do one's art?
So for me, I just don't watch TV a lot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a cool series will come up and I'll binge it, honestly. But mostly I don't watch TV. A lot of times I've actually sat the kids down next to me while I write so that they can feel like I'm there, and I am there for them, but I can get some words in. If I don't make the time to write, it doesn't happen. And so that comes before TV. It comes before reading as much as I used to. It comes before sleep sometimes.
So I think that's a key part on both of your parts then, is time doesn't come to you. You have to make the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, I'm currently a full-time freelance illustrator. So I try to have a routine, but sometimes that goes awry because, like I said, creativity can't be controlled like that. Yeah. Try my best to stick to cut my day in half, basically. So I be very creative for 4 to 5 hours, and then I would take like a 3 or 4 hour break to do errands or anything like that, and then I would come back and work the rest of the night. And I found that's really helpful because, I guess, in the morning, my brain doesn't work well creatively. So what I do is I do a lot of my, like when you're rendering a character or you're painting a character, you're looking at reference and you're just painting like their fingers or clothes or anything like that. And that doesn't require a lot of creativity. That just requires technical skills. Mm-hmm. And so I do that in the morning. And then at night, that's when my creativity work kicks in. So that's when I do sketches, come up with concepts, do all these development for my problem solving with my illustration clients. And I find that to be really helpful to me because I think it's important to reflect upon yourself and know when you should do what, when you should be creative, or when you should just do rendering, because that will really help smooth up your process. But when I'm not illustrating, when I have some free time, I notice that I can't sit down and just like watch TV because I've been sitting down all week to make art. I want to do something active and get out more. But Barbara said, just I think sometimes it is hard to find time to put a lot of creativity into my work because sometimes you're just not as motivated about something. Mm-hmm. Or you just don't have the time to put in the creativity because life does come up as well. And I just try my best. I think that's one of the best thing about being a freelancer is having that flexibility to work your own hours and just move things around as you go.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of the perks. My family has always told me I think you need a corporate job. You have to like be like 9 to 5, be with the company. But then I think of it in a way that like, but if I do that, I think I won't be as productive with my creativity. It would just be very kind of restricting for me. Mm-hmm. So I think freelancing is definitely the way to go for me personally.
But there's also a lot of self-motivation to make freelancing work, because to be a freelancer, you've got to be highly motivated. Mm-hmm. You've got to be very much determined and have a skill set that can actually see you through. But that's the, I don't want to call it value or not, but that's one of the things about working the corporate line, is that you've got your bases covered. You've got your insurance. You've got your guaranteed paycheck, as long as the corporation is still doing its thing. And so some people will definitely, a lot of people will see that there's a lot of security in that, not having to worry about those things. But then the trade-offs that you're talking about there. So mm-hmm. I've seen that with other professional illustrators who are you know, they've got through, like Tom Wood, you know, he said he did the corporate thing and, you know, experienced getting boned and just like, nope, I'm going to be my own boss. I'm going to do it. And he's been quite successful with it.
Right.
You know, so on your writing now, Barbara, so you've got novels that you're, that you've done in short stories. What do you see as your future now with writing that's going to be, you know, like, are you going to do series novels or are you just, are you going to have, you know, Sixers is now going to turn in, I mean, that could be an obvious, you know, it was, it's a great story, but I haven't, that's only a thing of yours I've read. So I don't know what else you have done, if that's a one-off type thing or if that's now sparking something else or what's your future in writing?
So I actually have three novels in the process right now. I have one I'm doing a final edit on before I indie publish it. I have one out for submission, and then I have one I need to finish writing, and a couple of short stories, including the 24-hour one I need to submit to magazines.
Yeah.
My ongoing goal is to actually up my production so that I can do more than one novel about a year, about 9 months to a year. I would love to be able to do two or three a year. But I can also tell with work when I'm really stressed, that's a lot harder. So it's I have to work through that, right, to figure out what I can do to up my production and enjoy life at the same time.
I get it. Now, does writing, is that also a source or a resource for you to, like, chill and to download some of the stress and strains of life so it becomes this also your own self-imposed therapy to the struggles and whatnot of life?
Absolutely. I may have killed off some enemies figuratively in a novel or two.
Yes, kill your darlings or not so darlings. And then is that also for yourself, and is that being able to do the art and illustration, does some of it also, are you able to like download some of your frustrations through your art, or is that where you go out and take your walk and just keep on walking until?
I think, yeah, no, my, what I do with my frustration is I get out of the office and usually I go for like 30 minutes to like an hour walk. And during that walk, I it helps me just like, solves a lot of my solutions, that my problems as an illustrator, because you come up with really cool solutions on your walk because it's very relaxing and you just kind of breathe and think about what you need to do, what step you need to take. But I think definitely getting out of the office, just be in a completely different space, just be with, like, I think nature for me really helps because it's completely different from a interior house or interior rooms, because nature is just like, it's just very organic. It's very refreshing. Sure. It's very refreshing and it's completely different. So it puts your mind in a completely different environment and you're just open to like many more things than when you're just sitting there in your room trying to think of a solution. So I think that's definitely important when you're freelancing, is to have a space where you can go and so you can take a break or you can come up with like new different solutions.
Right. Now, you made a comment last night when I was talking with you after the awards event and at the signing time. You talked about your mother, you know, and what was the best part of the night for you? It was like seeing your mother so happy. Mm-hmm. So you came from Vietnam, you transitioned here, and you mentioned that it was for them, they did it for you. So what was the scene there in Vietnam that they felt so compelled to want to come here and give you that ability to explore your art?
So I think in Vietnam, my family was, I think, struggling a little bit, and they know how hard it is just to be able to really make your dreams come true, because there are some restraints, and they just wanted to come to the U.S. because at that time, my uncle was also in the U.S. already, and they've heard so many amazing things about the country and so many doors that open and hear about all the amazing things that people have done over here. And I think they just want what's best for me. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I think they see moving here as the best choice because it just opens more doors. And they just wanted me to come over as well and just have a better chance at achieving my dreams. And I, whenever I think of it, I just think of all the things that we've been through, like coming here, my all three of us, not knowing any English, not knowing how to even interact with the people here, because culturally it's very different. And so I just think about all the things we've been through, and just when my name was called, and I, my mom was just jumping, coming down, and I was, and she was like, "So this is all the hard work that I've done, and this is so worth it to support you, and this is where it leads. So I am willing to do the hard work if it would make you be successful and live your life like this." And so just hearing her say that, and I just got very emotional. Sure. As well, of course. And
so she had half a dozen family members?
Yeah, she have, I think half of her siblings, it's over here in the U.S., but it's spread out all over the U.S. And then half of the family is back in Vietnam. So she basically left half her family in Vietnam. And we rarely see each other, those that live in the U.S., because we're all in different states. Mm-hmm. As well. So for her to leave her whole family behind and move to a small rural town in Missouri was very difficult, because there's no Vietnamese community, there's no Asian community. It was just her working in a completely different environment than she's never been. And she has said many times that she doesn't feel like she has many options for like fun or anything like that's entertainment for her in that town, but she does it for me. She continuously work hard just for me to have a future, and she's ingrained that in me, and I just become so grateful. Anything that makes her happy just makes me so happy. So that's why that was my favorite part of the event.
Yeah, it was amazing just seeing her. She was up before you.
Yeah, she was. Because I, at that point, I was still shocked in my chair. I couldn't even move. So I was like, okay, I'll try to stand up, I guess. But yeah, just seeing her like that was, yeah, definitely my favorite.
That's great. And just what you talked about there, you got people that were born and raised in America, mm-hmm. and they don't have a perspective, a world perspective. They just... You know, they'll find things that they can just try to be critical of about America and naysay. But then when you get someone else who comes from another country, it's a perspective that the spoiled little American brat doesn't have. Mm-hmm. And it becomes like a reality check. You know, that they don't realize that what we have here in America is really so special when you compare it to other countries. And you're, you know, what you have to say here on this, and what is possible in America? Mm-hmm. You know, it's. I think it's maybe something that the media likes to do. They like to consider that they're able to build up, you know, something, and then it's their prerogative also to tear it down. And you see that a lot in at least some of the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. They try to find something and then just let's rip it, and. So it builds a bit of a jaundiced view of what really is available in America. So I think listening to what your story there is really important that people understand, because the people listening to this podcast, it's about 100 different countries mm-hmm. around the world. And just speaking with Max last night, Ermak, you know, from Turkey, mm-hmm. you know, she said it was in a country where arts are not supported in the least. You know, especially with a girl, it was such an honor, and it was so special to win this competition, what it means to her, but also what it means to other artists, aspiring artists in Turkey, or we had Mason Matak, who was the winner from Iran. You know, what it means there, he said it's really hard as an artist to survive in Iran. So it is real that it's not the same playing field, you know, from country to country. So I think your story is really important that people listening to this understand that, one, you've got an outlet, a resource to be able to experience your art and share it with others who will just grant you the fact that you're an artist no matter where you're from and want to support you. And that's something which is the Illustrators and the Writers of the Future contest are really all about. You know, it was created by Owen Hubbard in 83. In 88, the Illustrators Contest started. We're like well over 800 winners now over those years. So it is something that when we see the illustrators from other countries, Sergei Poryakov, he was a winner 15, 20 years ago. The Iron Curtain had just collapsed. So we were able to get him out the month after that. And all you hear is the PR stuff that the PR machines come out with, but we loaned him his tie, his jacket, you know. He spoke three words of English, but they were so broke. It was like the USSR it stripped everything just for, you know, military was the primary thing that they invested in. But the actual person, they had no money. You know, so when he won this $5,000, he's now just an amazing persona. You know, he's had his galleries in UK and London and in New York. He's got a castle he built in Kiev. You know, he's an amazingly wonderful persona, and his art is just, it's very uniquely Ukraine, mm-hmm. You know, that style there. And that's something that's just amazingly wonderful with what this competition can actually do. And so seeing what you've done here, and we see more and more styles of art, you know, because your art looks way different than Irmax from Turkey, way different than what we've got someone else from Portugal who won. We've got someone else from South Africa who won. You know, we've got from all over the world the winners that are happening more and more, and that's a lot having to do with what Echo is doing now. But it's so gratifying seeing this. So now, have you always been from Utah?
Yes. My parents are from here, so from California. So I lived here for about 18 months when I was younger. So yes, definitely from Utah, but I love to travel. I speak Spanish. I've been to Mexico. We've been to Paris. I just love to travel and see other cultures and eat all the food. I love the food.
One thing is, I bring it up about Utah because as a publisher, I really like going to Salt Lake City Fan X. And three of our judges are from Utah, and it's Brandon Sanderson, Orson Scott Card, and Dave Wolverton, now Dave Farland. They all taught at BYU, Brigham Young University at one point. Now it's Brandon that's doing that. But the convention there that we attend, the FanX, we sell more books there than anywhere else because it's such a literate state. There's so many book readers and book lovers, and it's a joy as a book publisher to go there to exhibit and to meet writers. And we have more winners per capita from Utah than any other state in the United States. Wow. Yeah.
A ton of writers. So many writers. So many conventions. I let Dave know that I've semi-stalked him for several conventions because there's just so many great ones that he goes to and that I've been able to attend.
Yeah. Life, the universe, and everything is almost fully contained. Writers of the Future, winners, finalists. It's just been, you know, it's just really awesome with that. I went to, when I got Brandon on board as a judge, I went and spoke at the class at BYU. And, I mean, it was packed, you know, his class there. And the following year, one of the winners from Writers of the Future was one of his students there. But it's just great. So I was just wondering, you know, if it's the water, or if it's the salt, or if it's...
It's probably the mountains.
The mountains.
Beautiful
so
mountains.
Beautiful mountains
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
So beautiful mountains.
I visited there.
Lack of oxygen.
I'd never been there before, and my layover was at Salt Lake City, and the airport there, you see all the mountains.
Yes.
And I'm like, holy cow. Never seen anything like that in my life.
Hiking, skiing. Oh, it's amazing.
It's gorgeous. I wish I had more time, but I was stuck in the airport.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, every time I go there, didn't this time because it's still kind of like chilling out from the pandemic, but I always go up to Park City. Every year I go up there and do an early morning TV show on Park City TV, which is the location. It was the location of the Winter Olympics, and it's also where they have the,
Sundance.
Yeah, Sundance Film Festival there. It's very beautiful there, but it's just... Utah rocks. It's a beautiful state. Beautiful state. So we only have like a few minutes left here. So what do you plan, like, for your future now as, like, say, you're freelance, but any particular dreams or aspirations you've got with freelance? Because obviously you've met a lot of illustrator instructors who are freelance.
Right.
But they're not necessarily doing the same thing.
No. So I think after this contest, I'm planning on continuing to be a freelance illustrator, but my dream and goal would be able to work for bigger clients. And now that my name is getting out there, hopefully I'll get more opportunities to freelance. And one day I'll hope to move to move to California, because a lot of my work can pertain to a lot of the entertainment field in California, and to be able to work with the clients out here and mm-hmm. just be more connected with the amazing community of artists here in California is just astounding to think about. And I think that's where I want my career as a freelance illustrator to go next.
That's great.
Yeah.
And we've already gotten what your future is, but now my question is, what advice would you have, and I'm gearing this around the Writers and Illustrators of the Future contest, but what tips or advice do you have to the aspiring writer, Barbara?
So don't give up. I was close several times. Don't give up. Keep submitting. Keep writing. Because I never expected to win a golden pen after being so close to just giving it up for not getting anything, let alone a silver or honorable mention. So keep going.
So the honorable mentions made a difference?
They helped. But yeah, I was getting a little frustrated. What do I have to do to win? So yeah, keep going. Keep at it.
That's great. And Ian, what about yourself? Advice to the aspiring illustrator artist?
For me, I want to say to the illustrators out there to really reflect upon yourself as an illustrator and kind of find what you love to illustrate, what you like to depict, because I think that really helped motivate me as an illustrator to always put a part of myself in every project that I get. Put a part of what you like and try to incorporate that into all the art you make, because that will only bring out the passion in you as an illustrator. But more importantly, it will show the passion within your work. And everyone who views your work will view it as something that you put a lot of love into, put a lot of effort into. And if you keep doing that, your work will improve upon and just keep going. It's just improving. And as long as you always care about what you make as an illustrator and you always put all your efforts into it, I think you'll succeed as an illustrator.
That's great advice. And absolutely, I wholeheartedly agree. You can't win what you never submit for. And you'll never get recognized as a best-selling author or artist if you don't submit to be able to get that needed recognition. So I hope you both have amazing futures with you as writers and illustrators. You're already obviously on the road here. You are officially welcomed into the ranks of the professional. You've had a whole week of the illustrator judges and writer judges, hopefully, you know, making that, you know, very, very crystal clear that they treat you now as, you know, one of them. So well done and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, John.
And thank you for listening. Subscribe to the Writers of the Future podcast wherever you get your podcasts. The Writers of the Future podcast is available on SoundCloud, iTunes, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, Player FM, iHeart, and Spotify. We've also been globally syndicated on the United Public Radio Network. Writers and Illustrators of the Future are contests created by L. Ron Hubbard to provide a means for the aspiring writer and artist to be seen and acknowledged. It is free to enter and open to new and amateur short story writers and artists of science fiction or fantasy. Again, thank you, Barbara and Ann.
Thank you.
Thank you.